What I have down here, let's see, John Rivette with Robert Ripas on October 22, 1986. I had four things down here, Bob. One was to do an overview just about you. Just it'll give me, and this will be one of the only times I care much about dates, but just to give me an overview sense of then what to think about the ants. The second, a little bit more specific, would be an overview on the kinds of questions or other people or issues in worker education in Michigan, its history. The third is I'm planning to ask some questions of Charles Killingsworth on tape sometime this fall. You may have ideas now, or you may have later ideas of what I might ask him. And the fourth is just when it's another time we might talk. And I thought, my preference is usually just to talk for like an hour and a half, and then just call it a day, and then just go another time. If that sounds okay.
Okay.
So as I say, one of the few times I actually do care about dates, just to give me a sense, would be today. So, the name is Robert Ripas. When was Robert Ripas born and where?
1821 in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
To parents of what descent?
Father born in Greece, mother, parents born in Germany.
Either of them still speak those languages, or they're both?
My mother spoke German, my father spoke Greek.
What kind of jobs did they have when you were a kid in the 20s?
Well, in the 20s, my father worked in as a waiter in a hotel and in several nightclubs. In the 30s, he was unemployed from 29 till about 34, and then worked on WPA and its subsequent name changes, and then drove a truck for a non-union dairy for a while. It was finally organized by the Teamsters, and then wound up as a waiter in a hotel before he retired. Mm-hmm. When he came to this country, apparently he worked for a while in the copper mines in Butte, and the rest of the time until he wound up in Milwaukee, apparently he worked as a waiter in various parts of the country.
Is that pretty typical for somebody of Greek descent in that area?
Well, a lot of them wound up opening their own restaurants, but my father he wanted to, but never got around to.
What about your mother?
My mother never had a nursing degree, but had been a kind of housekeeper, children, attendant, nursing, that kind of thing for the Elines, which was the original owners of Schlitz Brewery in Milwaukee.
Mm.
And then after she got married, she was a housewife and didn't work after marriage.
You had some other brothers and sisters?
I had a sister 2.5 years younger.
During the 20s and up until when you first had a job, did your parents have anything to do with unions or political parties or anything?
Well, my father was always a member of the Hotel and Restaurant Workers Union, but was never in good standing with the hierarchy, and was active in the Teamster campaign in the small dairy. Although he may not have been a Communist Party member, he was cheating the party out of his dues, and was a broken man after Khrushchev's speech in 1956, because it shattered all of his dreams of the great progressiveness of the Soviet Union.
So when you were a young boy and then a young man. You already had in your family some political and union activist discussions in your family, just as were true for your own kid.
Well, the political discussions were disagreements. I remember I came home one time from school in 1939, and I just had my sociology teacher tell us that day that there was no need for unions anymore because everybody was getting high wages. And it was at that time that this organizing campaign was going on, where my father was working 60 hours a week for about 25 cents an hour.
And what was the discussion you had with your dad where you disagreed?
Well, it was mainly on whether the Soviet Union was a progressive or a reactionary force.
And he said progressive and you said reactionary in the world at that point. Where were you getting, was this normal adolescent disagreement with parents, or was this because you were getting some involvement on your own in high school or at subsequent
school? Well, the last year I was in high school, a friend of mine who was active politically invited me and another friend down to a youth committee against war meeting at which Amon Hennessy was speaking, who was one of the leaders of the Catholic Worker Group. And we went down to Heckel, and we went down and listened to Hennessy. There were about eight of us. After the meeting, we went to Wrigley's cafeteria on Wisconsin Avenue, which was an all-night cafeteria in East State till about 3 o'clock in the morning. And after arguing with Hennessy till 3 a.m, we joined the Youth Committee Against War. Several months later, I went to the National Convention of the Youth Committee Against War, which was held at Madison, Wisconsin, and heard Norman Thomas speak for the first time. And after he spoke, I joined the Young People's Socialist League and remained a member of that and the Socialist Party until I resigned in 1969 over the Socialist Party's position on Vietnam.
Okay. What was the name of the youth group for the SP?
Young People's Socialist League, YPSOS.
Okay. What was the first job that you had, Bob?
Well, the first job connected with union activity was street construction for the city of Milwaukee. We did street construction during the summer, and during the winter we did ash removal. Most of the furnaces were coal-fired, and we moved ashes. It was local two of AFSCME, which took in this group plus some cement finishers, electricians, and the rest. We had about 300 out of a potential of 1,000 members.
What year was this? About?
Well, I worked off and on for the city from...
Or how old were you?
Well, I was 21 at the time, so it would have been about 42 till about 44. 45, off and on I worked and went to school and that kind of thing.
Where were you going to school?
Well, I went to the University of Wisconsin Extension Division in Milwaukee, which is now University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, a four-year institution with graduate work. At that time, there were only 2 years of a college offered, and Madison had combined with Marquette University to keep the Milwaukee branch of the university from expanding.
And what were you pursuing there?
Economics.
Did you finish that 2-year program?
Well, I went my first year to Milwaukee State Teachers College, which is now the campus of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Then I transferred to Ripon College. I had a basketball scholarship. And then I went to the University of Wisconsin at Madison. Then I came back to the Extension. And I finally wound up graduating in 44, the summer of 44, from University of Wisconsin-Madison.
And what degree was that?
American Institutions.
A bachelor's or?
A bachelor's. I carefully went through the catalog and found the only program that you could get a degree without taking statistics.
Somehow you missed the war.
Well, that's a chapter I prefer not to be taped on, how I managed to stay out of the Army.
Okay, we can do another time, turn it off. Did you at this point have any interest in worker education, or is that come much later?
Well, when I joined Local 2, I became recording secretary and was on the executive board. And the main reason I was recording secretary was that I was one of the few people who could write reasonable English. Many of the workers were foreign born. A lot of them were German descent. They were not uneducated, but they simply didn't have good grasp of written English. In addition, there was a mixture of other ethnic groups, so the job went by default to me.
Mm-hmm. What if any connection, that's how you got into the union?
Then in 1944, AFSCME had a 2-week school at the University of Wisconsin, and my local gave me $15 a week to go to the school, so I hitchhiked up to Madison and stayed for 2 weeks, and then I was given a scholarship by the school for another week or two. And that's where I got interested in formal workers' education. One of the instructors at that AFSCME school was Joe Mira, M-I-R-E, who was the research and education director of AFSCME before he went to NILE, the National Institute of Labor Education. And Arnold Zander was president of the union.
Okay. In this kind of brief overview, because we could get into any specific stories, I think if you don't mind, it's better just to keep this kind of jumping pace. What basically did you then do after 44,
I went to work for the Falk Corporation, F-A-L-K. This was a corporation, I think it was the only company in the country then making speed reducers for naval vessels. It had been systematically robbing the government for years by adding costs of private jobs to the government contracts. And a man by the name of Tony Kinch, K-I-N-C-H, originally broke the story, had amassed tremendous amount of information, turned it over to various government agencies, and it was ignored. He ultimately was fired, and he suggested to me that I might want to go to work at the Falk Corporation. So I applied for a job in 44, And of all places, they put me on as timekeeper. So I had access to all the records. It soon became apparent that they were robbing the government blind. I copied the time cards, and I kept the true records also, and turned these over to Kinch. Meanwhile, one of the reasons I was interested in the Fall Corporation too was to play basketball. People on the basketball team got off part of the mornings, that kind of thing. During my stay there, I wrote a letter to the Milwaukee Journal denouncing the journal for denouncing conscientious objectors. Shortly after that letter appeared, I was called in by management and told that, well, they were laying me off, there was no work. I said, you mean to say there's no work? What? You got hiring signs out? Well, they fired me. Kinch later on told me that somebody in the office found out that somebody had run across this letter. Meanwhile, I had been making public statements about this company. They put two and two together, and as a result, I was fired. Well, I turned this information over to Kinch. Ultimately, Kinch collected an informer's fee of 10% of the alleged amount, although what they paid the 10% on was far less than was actually stolen. So then I was fired from Falk's. Pardon me, I was laid off. I went to work for Midland Cooperative Wholesale in the warehouse. And interestingly, shortly after being fired and shortly after going to work for Midland, my 4F was revoked, and that's a story of its own, which mm-hmm. I'll tell you about sometime. Mm-hmm. And I finally was offered the choice of, I guess it was 4 years in the federal pen or going into the Army. Discretion being the better part of valor, I went into the Army and spent 360 days there before I was discharged at the convenience of the Army.
We can do that another time.
Then I went up to the School for Workers and was hired as their... No, wait. I applied for a Ruskin College scholarship to Oxford. The British TUC and a British banker put up the money for a total of five scholarships for American trade unionists. I applied the first year the scholarships were available. So did Babs from Kentucky. We had never met. We met on the boat going over to England, and ultimately we got married. I applied when I was at the School for Workers. That's right. I was hired as a housing person to take care of the housing at the School for Workers before I went to Ruskin. And when I got back from Ruskin, I went on the staff of the School for Workers for 2 years before I was wound up in an interesting academic freedom case in which the university caved in to a degree even greater than this institution caved in recently.
At some point we'll talk about that. That takes us up to 47, 48.
So how are you? The university promised me a pay increase for 1950. Became obvious when I didn't get it, the handwriting was on the wall. So I went to work for the American Friends Service Committee in the Philadelphia office and ultimately became director of their Labor International Affairs program. On this program, my time was spent with unions in the international field, preparing materials, teaching classes, organizing conferences. In this 5.5 year period, I think, was my most productive and stimulating period of my life. With merger of the AFL-CIO in 1955, most of my work while with the service committee was with CIO unions. Lovestone, who was not then director of international affairs but ran the free trade union committee, was busy attempting to make sure that no AFL unions worked with my program. Some did anyhow, but when it became obvious that he was to be director of the new International Affairs Department, or at least a key figure in it, I decided to go elsewhere. And I went to the chemical workers, ICW, with whom I had done work for 6 years on a part-time basis. Not only the international affairs thing, but I also taught grievances and other things for them. Until I was fired for arrogance, insubordination, and false accusations against the union president. They were wrong only on the latter score.
Who's the president there then?
Oh, an asshole by the name of Edward Moffat. His son is a guy who has been federal mediation conciliation head, and well, I could tell you some interesting stories about him, but I'll save it.
Mm-hmm.
I then jumped from the frying pan into the fire and wound up as education director of the Pennsylvania Joint Board of the Amalgamated Clothing Workers, which meant I was to operate their recreational educational center at Cornwall, Pennsylvania. A beautiful 520-acre estate, which had been owned by the descendants of Priscilla Alden and John Alden, and had been sold to the union in 1948.
You were the what at the Pennsylvania?
I was the educational recreation director.
Of the Pennsylvania
Joint Board, which meant it was the shirt workers' joint board in eastern middle Pennsylvania, about 16,000 members, about 90% women.
How long did you do that?
Let's see, I was fired from the chemical workers. Oh, I lasted about 9 months, and how I managed to last that long, I'm not sure.
Takes us up to when?
And I came to MSU on August
11th, 1957. Now, prior to MSU, you had done some labor education within Michigan, though.
Oh, yeah. I've been coming to Michigan every year since 1950 for the AFSC program. In fact, I spoke at the first conference that was ever held at Kellogg Center. The state CIO had the opening conference at Kellogg in 1950, either 50 or 51. And I was one of the speakers at that program. And then I used to run a 1 week, see, under the original setup at the FDR CIO camp, you didn't have any of these damn regional schools. You had everybody coming, and then they took a subject for a week. There were joint evening sessions, but during the day you went to your own workshop on workers' comp and unemployment insurance. I used to run a 1 week workshop on international affairs, in which I used to bring in some people, but most of it I did myself. And I used to have, in fact, that one picture I think you have of me is of one of those international affairs workshops. We used to have maybe 15 people for the week, mm-hmm. something like that.
And Don Stevens is in that picture. He was probably coordinating.
Yeah.
Was there.
Well, he was probably running the entire camp then.
Mm-hmm.
See, Bill Kingsley was the first director, of the well, I shouldn't say the first, but I don't know when Kinsley came in as education director, but Stevens replaced Kinsley when Kinsley went to the ICFTU. Mm-hmm. Bill is still alive in Vermont. He's in his high 70s now. Mm-hmm. So I came to Michigan not only for a week during the summer. In fact, one summer I spent 6 weeks at FDR school doing something in international affairs, a couple nights during the week. I don't know how I ever lived through those 6 weeks, because two of the weeks were Canadians, and Canadians do more drinking than anybody else in the world. Mm. And to stay up drinking until 3 o'clock every morning and then get up at 7 and do this for 2 weeks and then have 4 other weeks that are almost as bad around you as I couldn't do it today, I'll tell you that.
But the students were alive and alert in the morning?
Yeah.
Sort of.
Well, when Kinsley was there, everybody had to show up.
Okay.
I mean, he rolled them out of bed. When Stevens took over, the thing went to pop.
Okay, we'll do some stuff on that. Give me just kind of the broad, this is a tough question, but I'm going to force it. What I'm going to force is wait till the slides open. Okay, let's take a break. What I'm going to ask you to do is think about something that will take a 5-10 minute break. What I'd like you to do is take those years at State, which were, what was the total years?
Well, I came August 11th, 1957.
And you retired?
July 1985.
Okay, so we're talking
June 30th, 1985.
28 years. Trying to, in focusing on, maybe some would be worker education, some would be university professor, some would be political gadfly or whatever we quote kind of thing. Vietnam War. Just try to break that up into, say, what would be the 10 major things that I should, at some point, focus with you about those 28 years.
Well, one of the things I think would be the relationship between the labor education programs in the state.
Mm-hmm.
The role of the labor program within the university, the relationship with the unions, the question of getting better quality in labor education. And I guess some definition of agreement on what labor education is.
Okay. Would it be a value to also discuss credit, non-credit?
Yeah, well, I think that would be part of what is labor education.
Mm-hmm.
But,
and is part of relationship within the university the issue of rewards and...
Well, where the program is based, the question of status, the ability to develop an independent program.
Okay. Another one. We'll just go around on these. What would be the questions that I might ask Charles Killingsworth in terms of worker education history initiative.
Ask him why he stepped down as director.
Okay, what else?
Well, you might get his ideas on how the program developed, the how and why. So you know there was a program before this, Labor Industrial Relations Center was set up.
No.
Oh, see, there was a program in continuing education headed by a guy by the name of Stoy Minton, M-E-N-T-O-N, who had been with the University of Michigan program that was thrown out when GM raised hell.
Do you know firsthand about that issue? Or just what you've read that I would have read?
Well, from talking to people who were involved in it, but I wasn't here at the time. See, that was in 48.
Anyways, there may have been a program with Stoy Minton.
Yeah, and Stoy was not a very effective guy. He was a nice guy, but he was kind of like Jackie Brophy in the sense that he was tongue-tied before a group, had a great deal of difficulty articulating himself before a body. And he was on, when Fred became head of the labor program and the LIRC was officially set up, he was one of the staff people like myself. And then he was very upset, I guess, that he didn't get the job that Fred got and left after a year. Now, no way.
What? Where'd he go?
He went to, I think, Baltimore to be their human relations guy, and then he wound up teaching sociology at some college in Pennsylvania, and I believe he died within the last year or two. But he was an old SP member, too.
Anything else I should ask, Kelly? That's fine, I'm just curious.
Well, if you find out why he quit as director, tell me. See, apparently the only story we can find out is that he apparently had some promises from Hannah to develop the program. Hannah reneged. Charles threatened to resign. I don't know, from the university or what. Well, anyhow, he wound up becoming a university professor and got this cushy deal of only having to teach two subjects a year, two courses a year, not a term a year. Some years he hasn't even taught two. And reporting directly to the president. Now, I don't think all these other presidents since Hannah know about this arrangement, but he's supposed to be reporting to them. I think they think he's just down in the school someplace. But this guy has really had it made, and exactly what this deal was that brought this about, I don't know. It's
okay. Other questions, Ben? We get off the killings.
Charles, you know, if you thought Jack was a secretive guy, you should have saw Charles. Oh, my God.
Another series of questions that could be to you. They're questions from me to you, but that I'd like to talk about that maybe you'd be of willingness that aren't worker ed directly. One is a little bit about Michigan labor and Democratic Party. Another one would be about the career of Sam Fishman, to the extent you know. Another one would be to educate me about the SP Shanklinites, Sedusas, and DSI, etc. Another might be a little bit about Vietnam, and SDS at MSU. Another would be the career result in parency. I'm sure I'm going to think of others, but these kind of stick in mind as things that I've always wanted to ask Bob about. There's also an affair as possible subjects for some point. Mm. Okay. Another thing that would be of value I don't even have on my list. If you were going to take on a project related to history of Michigan, worker education, who would you interview besides Bob Repas and Don Stevens and Charles Killingsworth?
Well, Fred Heeler.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Jack Stever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously, High Corn Blue.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose Gene Brook. I have no idea where Gene is these days, but
mm-hmm.
Bill Kemsley.
Russ Allen.
Russ.
Jackie Brophy. Are we going somewhat in the order of the priority, would you say? That it would be most important.
I would put Russ up higher.
Okay. Anyone else? We've said Repa, Stevens, Killingsworth, Haler, Stever, Allen, Cornbluth, Brooke, Kemsley, Brophy.
I don't know if he's still alive or not, but an interesting guy was Judah Draub, D-R-O-B. He was the education director for CWA in Michigan until the early 60s when he went to Washington. He was the only guy on a labor advisory committee that I knew who ever had any useful suggestions. You know, most of the goddamn committee members sit there like bumps on the log, and unless they're mad about something, don't have anything to propose.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this guy used to have a lot of ideas. Some of them were nutty, but he was really thinking and concerned, and you might get his ideas of the early days.
That's fine. We'll think about
Frank Marquardt is dead.
Yeah.
Oh, you might. He's recently retired from Columbia.
BJ?
Yeah, BJ. Although I've always thought BJ was full of shit, but you have some interesting.
Okay.
Now, Duffy, of course, was.
Martin?
Was at Northern for. Before he went to Minnesota, he might give you some picture of Northern. Now, there have been some UAW guys that were around a long time. Johnny Angelus was around a long, long time.
Bill Marshall? Getting off the subject, tangential interest.
Florence Peterson is still alive, I think. She's living at Sand Lake, Michigan, which is outside of Grand Rapids. I haven't seen her for years, but I see the name once in a while. She was education director before Annulus was there. And it might be interesting to get her observations on a woman working for the union in 20 years ago, 30 years ago. A very bright woman, very able, but she talked back to her betters and that got her into all sorts of hot water. I saw her tell off with Leonard Woodcock one time.
What about Kara Hutton?
Yeah, Hutton's around.
Okay.
Another guy, and I guess he's in New York now, Brendan Sexton. Do you know Brendan?
Also, probably the other Sexton too.
Pat?
Yeah. Not this critical?
No, she didn't really have any. Her main contacts have been really, since she's moved out of Michigan, she's gotten.
What about Oscar
Peniston? Yeah, Oscar. Glendon was a brilliant lunatic.
Okay, different subject. Who would be some of the contacts as I pursue this issue about Michigan Teamsters History Project?
What do you mean, Michigan Teamsters?
The project I described briefly to you, relating to a Teamster local in Detroit, 337, is having their anniversary coming up, and they want me to do some research work or whatever for them, is now moving into part of a Teamsters national five-year thing, and they might want me to do some things on history of Michigan Teamsters. Not just the Detroit thing that's starting, but other ones upstate.
Well, all the Teamsters I've known are either in jail or dead.
Okay. So you haven't had much dealings, and neither has the MSU program, Teamsters?
No, I think I've run probably the only Teamster programs run, a couple in Saginaw, two in Flint. And outside of these conferences, one-day things down in Detroit, I don't think we've had any solely Teamster programs except those I've run that I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've had individual Teamsters coming in,
mm-hmm.
you know, in our mixed classes, but the guy who ran in Saginaw, he's sitting in jail. It surprised me because I thought he was a bright young guy. But I can't tell you about Teamsters.
Oh, okay. But you think it's worthwhile pursuing?
They got a pretty grim record in Michigan. I don't know how you're going to be able to find any nuggets to.
I thought you got a big one the other day. Okay.
Well, I think there are some attempts to change, but if you look at the record up to now, it's
okay. Are there any other things that strike you that we ought to talk about? If we can ever get through any of all of these.
Well, I think a little bit about the FDR-CIO camp.
Mm-hmm.
Offhand, I can't think of anything more at the moment.